Blog Talk Radio.
At 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T. I'm your host, Mike Tramatozzi, here with you for the next half hour, going over everything in the world of sports. Obviously, a big day today. Baseball opening day. Obviously, well, last night they had the first game of the year with the Astros beating the Rangers in their first game in the American League. Now with interleague play basically every day of the week, the whole season, because of the even leagues now. So that got underway, the Astros with a nice win on opening day, probably one of the really only bright spots they're going to have this year, because they're a really bad team. They actually, as a team, make less on the roster than Alex Rodriguez does, which is A, embarrassing for what A-Rod makes, B, probably more so embarrassing that the Astros would actually just basically give the finger to their team, their fans, and say, hey, we don't care. It's embarrassing that a team would have a payroll that low. Even the Marlins don't have a payroll that low. And I don't think there's a cheap. I didn't think there was a cheaper owner in sports than Loria, yet they have a higher payroll than the Astros do. The problem is baseball has a soft cap at the top, but there's no bottom to it. There's no floor. They can basically spend anything they want on players. So the problem there entails that there's no incentive for these teams to have a certain payroll. You know, should they make a $50 million floor? Yeah, something like that would work, because then these teams have to spend money. It's not like they're not going to, you know, it just boggles the mind that a team would actually think that's good business. I can't imagine as an Astros fan why I'd want to go to any game this year, knowing full well that, you know, the team really doesn't have any aspect of contending this year. So you have that, and then baseball, like I said, baseball really, really needs to think long and hard about there being some kind of like a cap to the or a salary floor, because some of these numbers, these teams are just, and they just get away with it, and you know, people whine and moan and complain about it, but there's no forcing of them to do anything about it. You know, is it embarrassing for baseball? You're darn right it's embarrassing for baseball to have a team that's making less as a salaried organization compared to one singular player. I mean, that's horrible. But they got a win last night. Bud Norris pitched well, probably going to be the next Astro out of Houston. So when you look at the rest of the league, obviously in New York, you got the Mets and the Yankees both playing at 1 o'clock today, so about a little over an hour from now, they will start their season. So it'll be interesting to see how those teams react. Obviously, the expectations are pretty low for the Mets. Their win projection was at about 75, I think it was, and the Yankees were at about 84. So both teams don't really have that big of expectations. So I'm intrigued. I mean, I'm not really excited about baseball. I mean, this is the first time in a long time that, you know, it hasn't been a fun lead up to opening day where you get excited for it and whatnot. The Yankees, I think, are going to be pretty bad this year. I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to be pretty bad. You know, at least maybe for the first year. Their pitching staff is going to have to carry them through this month and a half until they get Jeter and Granderson back. Potentially getting Teixeira back is a possibility in May. It doesn't seem likely. In fact, if you were a betting man, it seems more likely he's going to be out longer, if not the whole season. The way they talk about it, this is the same injury that Bautista had for the Blue Jays last year. He came back, played a week, or a couple games, and then he was right back to the DL and actually had season-ending surgery. So if that's the path this is going, it does not bode well for Teixeira to play at least for a while this year. You know, they originally said 8 to 10 weeks. I think it's going to be a little bit longer than that. They went and got Lyle Overbay to play first base. They have Euclid, who could play first base in a pinch. Obviously, they made the trade for Vernon Wells to give him a little bit of what they hope is pop in the lineup. I don't see it. Vernon Wells, if you look at the numbers for the last couple of years, has probably been the worst player in baseball. The Yankees are anticipating him playing better. Anything's possible. You know, they got him. I don't know if it's on the cheap, but you know, $6 million a year. The Angels are paying a majority of his salary just to have him off the team. They got two low-level minor leaguers for him. So there's a lot of question marks about this Yankees team. The Mets, their question marks basically revolve around who's going to play in the outfield. You have Colin Cowgill, who's going to be your everyday center fielder. You got Lucas Duda in left, or in right. They like his bat, I think, a little bit more than what some other people do. His fielding definitely leaves a lot to be desired. You're going to see some platoons with Jordani Valdespin, who's probably going to play a little bit more second base, I think. Kirk Neuenhuis when he gets healthy. These are the guys that are going to be in the outfield for the Mets. You would have liked, if you were a Met fan, to see a guy like Den Dekker have a really good spring and kind of force the Mets to give him a spot. He didn't, so they didn't, and he's back at AAA. The outfield problems for the Mets are a disaster. They just don't have any concrete starting caliber outfielders. You know, and then is that going to lead them to overpay a guy like Jacoby Ellsbury in the offseason at 31 years old? It's entirely possible that they would. The Mets claim that they're out of the problems with their money. I'll believe it when I see it with the Mets. But hey, opening day always gives you a little bit of excitement in the air, a little bit of hope that maybe this year is going to be different. Maybe this year they'll surprise, you know, teams will surprise people. It's a lot of teams with big expectations. The Nationals were odds, you know, everybody's trendy pick to get to the World Series after falling apart in Game 5 at home last year against the Cardinals. You got the Reds, who everybody thinks are going to be just as good as last year. The Dodgers have obviously spent enough money that they have built expectations on to them. Can teams like the Cardinals contend again? Obviously, the Giants going for their third world title in 4 years, which would be a dynasty of sorts that we haven't seen since the Yankees of the late 90s, early 2000s. Obviously, the Rangers are facing a little bit of an upheaval with Josh Hamilton leaving. Can they contend in the AL West? Are they going to be a little, you know, they let it slip through their fingers last year with Oakland. Can Oakland build on last year and continue that surprising stretch where they took Detroit to the limit in terms of their that series? And then in the AL East, obviously, you've got the Blue Jays, who got enough players, name players, to go with their core from last year that you expect them to finally get over that hump and approach 90 wins and above. They're the trendy pick to win the AL East. Time will tell. I think if everybody stays healthy, them and the Rays are the two best teams in that division, based off of overall talent. Obviously, the Rays struggle to score runs. At some point, you're going to see Will Myers up, and that's going to help their offense. Him and Desmond Jennings are obviously their outfield of the future. Evan Longoria not going anywhere anytime soon. Obviously, you're running out of time with David Price, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to re-sign him before he hits free agency, which lowers the belief that they can sign him at all if he gets to free agency. But if there's anything that the Rays have shown you, they don't miss a beat when they lose certain players. Obviously, David Price is different than any other guy they've lost in terms of how since 2008 when they made that leap into a contending team and got to the World Series. They lose B.J. Upton last year, but obviously, like I said, at some point you're going to see Will Myers this year. Desmond Jennings is a stud, and he's only going to get better. I think the Rays offense will be better this year. Yunel Escobar at shortstop's an upgrade over everything they've ever had there since 08 with Bartlett. Again, they lose Matt Garza to the they lose Matt Garza, but they build through their farm system, and don't worry about the amount of pitching that the Rays have, because if you're going off straight pitching staffs, they're the best team in baseball. You still have Matt Moore, you've got Hellickson, Alex Cobb to go with David Price and Niemann. That's a formidable rotation. Their bullpen should be at least on par with last year. So the Rays are, I think, a better... Once Will Myers gets to the major league level, he's not going to go back down. The Rays have shown you that with Longoria, they brought Longoria pretty quickly. They brought him up in May of 2008, and then I think in July signed him to a 7-year extension. So they show you they will spend money on people that they think are their core guys, and that's a really interesting way that they're building their teams. It's almost building it in a way that NFL teams build their teams nowadays. So many teams want to build their team like the Yankees and just say, hey, we'll just sign any of our players and we'll keep the same 20 guys and rotate in 4 or 5 guys every year, but we will have our set team for years. The Rays, basically, kind of like in the NFL, with the hard salary cap in the NFL, you basically have to make decisions on your, say, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 core guys that you want for 4 or 5 years, and then the rest of the rotation, the rest of the team is built around draft picks, young guys, cheap guys, veterans that are on short-term deals. That's how they build their teams, because you have to you can't spend on 15 guys like you could in the past and have guys like, say, Pepper Johnson never leave the Giants or something like that, where guys just stay 6-7 years on the same team and they're a backup or things like that. The Yankees, the way of the Yankees building their teams of just signing guys to 6-year deals, and then you have that set lineup or rotation for 5-6 years, I don't think is the way of the future in baseball. The way the Rays are building their teams, where they sign guys to deals, maybe they get them out of those arbitration deals, so they go right to unrestricted free agency, but they get 4 or 5 years out of them. Like a David Price, who came up in 08, now going into 2013, he's a free agent after next season. Do the Rays try and sign him? David Price has made it clear that they don't get a home. He's not going to give him a hometown discount. So as a Rays fan, you know how much you can get for David Price. Obviously, they're not going to trade him this year. It would make no sense to even entertain it this year. But next year? Next year is an interesting plot if you're the Rays, because Price is a free agent and you have this sense that he's not going to re-sign with you. There's not a pitcher outside of Verlander, I think, that if he was offered in a trade, you could get more for than a David Price. He could bring you back a nice haul, which, again, is how the Rays build their team. So if you assume that Myers is part of the future, Jennings, Cobb, Hellickson, Longoria, that's a good 5 to keep yourself competitive, to where you then sprinkle in your young guys, pitchers that you bring in, another outfielder, Joyce, is a guy that you can keep around pretty cheaply. So I like how the Rays build their teams, and they're always in contention because they build it with pitching and defense, but they're very smart in that they don't, A, overpay certain players. They're amazing at building a bullpen on the cheap, as they showed you last year, but they're a team that knows the way you can sustain your success as a small market team is by getting signing the right guys to long-term deals and surrounding them with young talent or cheap talent. And that's the way they build it. And it's been successful for them, and I don't see any reason as to why it would change going forward. So, if you look at obviously, another team that had a big offseason was Atlanta. They unite the Upton brothers in the outfield. So that'll be interesting to see. That's a pretty good out. That's probably one of the best outfields on paper. You know, if B.J. Upton plays like he's capable of playing with Upton and Hayward on the other side of him, that's a really good outfield. The Braves are, I think, stacked offensively. Pitching can be a bit of a question mark, but if it's healthy, it's very good. I think they're the second-best team in the AL, NL East. I think they'll challenge for the division, but I think the Nationals are just an all-around better team. I think you're going to end up seeing Atlanta in that wild card game again. And one would have hoped that they, as a Braves fan, you would have better, if you're a Braves fan, you would have better success in it this year than you did last year. The other big topic of the day was the NCAA tournament, which is now in the Final Four. Three teams that I don't think you're not shocked they made the Final Four: Syracuse, Michigan, Louisville. But I think a lot of people are surprised at Wichita State making the Final Four and dominating the way they did in the first 30 minutes of that game against Ohio State and then holding on for dear life at the end. Basically, they got up by 20 with 10 minutes to go in the game and then just held on for dear life as they tried every which way to lose that game until they made a couple plays late to hold on. I think they cut it to 62-59 at one point, and then was it Cotton? I think Cotton hit a three at the top of the key, which basically was the biggest shot of the game. Then Van Fleet had the floating fadeaway that bounced off every part of the rim and went in with, I think, under a minute to go, which gave them the margin of victory they needed. So they held on. They played a great 30 minutes, and then, like I said, held on for dear life in the final 10. They will play Louisville, who, after, I would say, probably the worst injury I've ever seen with Kevin Ware. And, I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because it physically made me sick. It really numbed the rest of the game out for me. I had no feeling towards that game or any sort of which way that – it was just something like that. It took all the starch out of that game to see that injury to Kevin Ware. And the great news is that he's up and he's walking around on crutches already. They say it's going to be about a year till he comes back, but that is with modern medicine and everything like that, it wouldn't surprise me if he's back sooner than that playing for Louisville. But at the worst case, he will be able to play again. So you're really happy with that. But boy, that was one of the worst things I've ever seen. And I saw Willis McGahee's injury. I've seen Sean Livingston's injury. Nothing worse than this. Obviously, it brings back memories of the kid from Alabama suffering a compound fracture, making that crazy catch. I think it was a couple of years ago. I think it was Saban's first year in Alabama. And it brings back memories of that, but I've never seen just the reactions on the court with Pitino wiping away I've never seen Rick Pitino cry before. Just the reactions of Bohannon and Russ Smith, who's also from the city, like Kevin Ware, Siva, and like I said, Bohannon and Montrezl Harrell. They said some of the players were getting sick on the sidelines, and it's one of the, like I said, it really took the starch out of that game. You to me at least, I had no, I was numb to the game. Even as the game got going in the second half and Louisville dominated Duke in the second half, they outscored them 50-31. You just had a sense that it just felt not wrong, but it just had no feeling to it. So, but like I said, great news that Kevin Ware's already up and walking on crutches, which is amazing. And it really shows you how far we've come in terms of injuries and things like that. But Louisville somehow regrouped, and I was telling this to a couple people who I was watching the game with, that Louisville, I thought there was only one way Louisville was going to win that game, and it was that they were going to blow Duke out. I just feel like with kids, with teenagers, I just feel like with everything that happened, I just didn't feel like they had the mental, not capacity, because I think anybody has the potential to compartmentalize, distraught and just the anything you were feeling, sadness, anger, anything. You have the ability to compartmentalize it. But I feel like in that situation, I feel like they wouldn't have had their minds clear enough in a close game to pull it out. I thought the only way they were going to win was if they blew Duke out, and they did. They took it to Duke in the second half, and they blew their doors off. The Duke had no answer for Siva and Russ Smith penetrating. And then every time they missed a shot, Gorgui Jang was there, Bohannon was there, and Harrell was there to just make Duke's life miserable on the glass. And then Duke struggled with Louisville's pressure, and Duke went a while without scoring any hitting any shots. They went a long time in the second half without hitting a bucket. It took a close game, and Louisville ended up winning by 20-plus. So Louisville did exactly the way I thought they were going to win that game. Considering everything that went down, like I said, I thought the only way Louisville was going to win that game was if they blew Duke out, and they did. So they move on, and they move on to the Final Four against Wichita State, where I don't think they'll have any problems beating Wichita State. As Wichita State showed you, they struggled with pressure at the end of that Ohio State game. And the pressure Ohio State brings and the pressure Louisville brings are two completely different animals. And I think Wichita State's really going to struggle with that. Now, if Wichita State can control the pressure better, and the way to do that is to force Louisville into missing shots and getting your rebounds, because by that, they don't have time to set up the pressure. The only way I think Wichita State can win this game is if they make shots, they get out in transition. They don't want to play helter skelter, because I think that plays into Louisville's advantage, because Louisville wants to speed the tempo up. But I think the only way Wichita State can have a shot is they have to play better against pressure. They really struggled against it with Ohio State, and if you struggle against Ohio State, who doesn't really like to pressure, Louisville is going to chew you up. So they have to make better decisions with regarding breaking the press, and then they have to make shots, and they cannot allow Louisville to get any second chance points, because that is what will kill them, just like it killed Duke. In the other game, Syracuse is playing lights out defensively. I think someone said they've held their four opponents to just 61 made field goals, which is insane. That's about 15 a game. If you're holding teams to 15 made field goals a game, you're going to be very hard to beat. Now, the one problem with a zone is that teams that can shoot can give problems to the zone. You saw last year with Wisconsin in the Sweet 16, the amount of threes they were hitting forced Syracuse to extend the zone, and then that can allow potential problems for cuts, dribble drives, things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how they play Michigan's zone. Now, I really think they're going to have to muddy up this game, turn it into a physical slowdown game, because that's what Michigan struggles with. They struggle in games against teams that want to muddy up the game, because they want to get out, they want to run, they want to use their athleticism. If you let Michigan get out, run, get open shots, they're going to beat you 9 times out of 10. Syracuse is playing good enough defense that I think they can muddy up the game and force Michigan to play at a lot slower pace, and that will give them a chance, but they're going to have to score too. Michigan is scoring at a huge pace in this tournament. They scored over 80 points against Kansas. They scored 79 yesterday. They've got shooters galore across the board. Hardaway, Robinson, Burke, Stauskas, and with Mitch McGarry playing down low, they can give you a ton of problems. So I think Syracuse has their hands full, but I think it's a game they absolutely can win because of the way they played against Indiana and the way they played against Marquette, where they just completely flummoxed them with the zone and turned it into a rock fight where Indiana and Marquette just had no shot. You know, they got those games close, but in the second half, Syracuse took both of those games and ran with them and just suffocated them. And they're going to have to do that again on Saturday if they're going to want to play in the national title game. So if I had to make decisions on this, I would say that it's going to be Louisville against Syracuse in the national title game on Monday. This time next week, we will discuss it. We will see how wrong I am and get you ready for what will probably be Michigan-Wichita State. Because like I said, my picks always go opposite. Always go opposite. So I say it'll be Louisville-Syracuse. So that means you should prepare for Wichita State-Michigan on Monday. But we are unfortunately out of time for today. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Hope everybody enjoyed it. I always do. Everybody, enjoy the week. Enjoy your sports, your basketball. Coming down the stretch run, only 10 games left for most teams as we head towards the playoffs. Enjoy your baseball. Get ready for the Final Four. Enjoy it on Saturday. We'll see you here next week. We'll go over all that. We'll get you ready for the national title game. We'll go over baseball. We'll get you ready as, like I said, the NBA goes into the stretch run. And we'll see everybody here next week. So everybody enjoy the week and take care.